Friends, I'm going to take you through a journey of human resources management. Now, this subject, many of us feel that it's a subject which is to do with human resources department. I want all of you to listen to this whole conversation with you from a very broader perspective. So, we'll be taking all the basic processes or the steps or the functions in this particular approach called human resources management. So let me take you to the introduction of this particular chapter. There are, what is the objectives of the session of this chapter number one? We'll get in touch with what is human resources management, the functions involved in HRM, how HR has evolved over the years, the history of HR, differentiate among personnel management, industrial relations, HRM and HRD. Four different types of processes which has got evolved in the last so many years. The process of HRM in an organization, we'll take a snapshot about how an HR has to function in an organization. Factors affecting HRM in an organization, what are the various things that come in the way? What are the various factors that are required that we'll get in touch with? And we'll also little bit touch about the future of HRM, strategic HRM and HCM, which is human resource, human capital management, the latest. So this is the flow with which we guys are going to be talking to each other. So let me take you further. The structure of the session, how am I going to take this session? It's going to start off with what is the nature of HRM, functions in HRM, the evolution of HRM, how HRM has evolved over the last so many years, difference among personnel management, industrial relations, HRM and HRD. Each one has got certain specific area of focus. The process of HR, which is about the steps in HR. How do we go about dealing with people? There is a certain scientific approach. Factors affecting HRM, the future of HRM, and finally the summary, which is going to summarize the whole chapter. Taking up the first one, nature of HRM. What is HRM? It's a process where people and organizations are brought together so that goals of each are met. There are two entities. On one hand, there's an organization. Now, organization is what basically? It's a social entity. Every organization is a social entity. It means what? Organization and society are interdependent. The organization has been created because society has a need, a special need. This institution, Wellinger, has been created because there's a special need by a section of people in the society to have quality B education. So, we have an organization here and there's a society. So, organization and society are interdependent. So, when an organization is set up, it needs to have certain goals. And the goals have to be very smart. In principles of management, we have heard about smart goals, right? Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic and time-bound. Once the goals are set, the organization is ready to achieve the goals. And to achieve the goals, the organization needs to go through the scientific management process, which we have learned in semester 1, principles of management. Now, what does the scientific management process entail? It entails four different resources, which we talked about in principles of management. Men, machine, materials and money. Now, out of the four M's, there are three M's which are inanimate. They don't talk, they're not live, they don't walk. That is machines, money and materials. The fourth M, men or human resources, is what we are discussing here. So, an organization, they say, is made or broken by manpower. So, human resources can make or break an organization. All of us know it. Good human beings, good people with the right mindset, with the right attitude, they make an organization. It starts from the top. At the same time, if the people are there, good people are there, but they do not get directions and we don't get the proper person for the organization, for the proper job, then we have an issue. After taking in people in an organization, if we don't upgrade them, we don't give them training and development, we don't give them employee welfare, we don't care for them, what would happen? The good people will leave and go. Now, all these processes are taken for granted, unfortunately. In the obsession to produce, in the obsession to produce more and more goods, in the obsession to deliver more services, to add on to the top line and the bottom line of an organization, what do people do? They neglect people. They neglect people because people are taken for granted. This is unfortunate about human beings. the very human resources who are making companies happen, making companies grow by their intellectual capital, by their mind and muscle, are the ones who normally go through certain types of indifferent behavior by the very company which hires them. The purpose of this studying HRM is to understand the importance of human resources management. It's there for every one of us, regardless of what specialization we are going in for. So friends, I want you to realize that there are people on one side who are running organizations, and the organizations themselves who are taking care of people outside. There are people within, there are people outside. The people outside are the stakeholders, the customers, the suppliers, the distributors, etc. And the people inside are the ones who run the company. Now, all of us will agree that if the people inside are taken care of, then the people outside would be taken care of. In many organizations, the people inside are not so much taken care of. So as a result, the outside people, you and me, the customers, when we meet these organizations, we come to realize that they do not treat us well. Many organizations, the customer service is very poor. The deliverables is very poor with the customers outside. And invariably, 10 out of 10 cases, you can verify it anywhere you want to verify. We find that a disgruntled employee, an employee who is not happy, will create unhappiness for the customer. Now, this has come to light today in the 21st century. In fact, there's an author who has written a book on the internal customers matter, the external customers come later. A different wording altogether. He says that it's important to take care of my employees first. If my employees are not happy, they will create unhappy customers. And as a consequence, what would happen? My company will go from bad to worse. Now, this is something few companies realize. And whenever an angry customer or a disgruntled customer comes in front of you, you start doing a patch-up work rather than going to the root cause and understanding what has gone wrong. So we have to first project properly the importance of human resources management. Don't take them for granted. If you hire somebody in your organization and you feel that, you know, this person is qualified for this job and he will do a good job, you are mistaken. People will give you their best when you treat them well. People will give their best when you make them grow. People will give their best when they know that they are getting least manipulated. When people come together, there is bound to be manipulation. There is no doubt about it. But when people realize that they are getting least manipulated, they are made to feel good, they are made to feel important, not as a strategy but genuinely, and the company cares for them, then they would stretch themselves and they would even stay with the company as lifetime employment. This is what we see in Japanese companies. So friends, the importance of this, people and organizations coming together, is what HRM talks about. They are brought together so that the goals of each are met. I have a goal as a human being, as a person, with the organization where I am working. So I have to take care of my individual goals, and I also have to take care of the organization goals. Now, to make these two things match, we need to have a scientifically designed process called human resources management. Taking it further, friends, organizations have realized that they may be technologically advanced, high-tech organizations. Take companies which are IT-based, IT and ITES companies, BPOs, technologically advanced. But it is the people who offer competitive advantage to an organization. Today we are seeing a lot of BPOs. We see a lot of organizations which are IT run. Not all of them are able to sustain human beings. The best developers in an IT organization to join, they don't stay there for long. The company doesn't treat them well perhaps. Something is not okay there. At the same time, we do come across other IT companies wherein the developers, or for that matter anybody, they stay on. The attrition levels are very low. It's a direct reflection about the culture of the company. It's a direct reflection about the policies they have towards the human resources whom they hire. So it's very important that you may invest a lot in technology. You may invest a lot on many, many high gadgets. But if you do not invest on people, if you think that you're going to hire a person from the IIT, a topper, or an institute like Wellinger, you're going to hire the best of the brains from here, and you think that they're going to be eternally working, you're mistaken. Because human beings constantly require motivation and rejuvenation. We always need sanction. We always need that stroking which we call in emotional intelligence. So human beings have to be always, you have to keep treating them well all the time and also give them the motivation for advancement. So organizations have realized that they may be technologically advanced, but it is the people who offer competitive advantage to an organization. If my organization treats my people well, then my people will treat the customers well. They'll stretch themselves to give service to the customer. Definitely. And when they do that, what will happen? My company will be ahead of my competitor. If you take any brand which has sustained for a long period of time, you'll notice that the brand has sustained through thick and thin of the economic weather only because the human resources kept that fort going, kept the boat going. The boat was not rocking. The boat did not sink. It's the people who make or break an organization. People offer skills, capabilities, systems, practices, bonding, behaviors for effective execution of organization strategies. You know, we have what is called as the hardware of the company, the building, the offices, the computers which you have, all the various gadgets, the products that you make, if it's a manufacturing company. Now all this is hardware, and we get the technology, and we have various processes. But human beings are the ones who run it, and when they run it, they put all these into account. Each one has got an explanation, skills, doable actions. Information or knowledge plus repeated actions gives you skills. So people join an organization and they learn the work. When they learn the work, they develop skills. Look at yourself when you join the company for the first time as a trainee. You are kacha. Gradually what happened? You started working, and every day you work, you made some mistakes. And gradually when you sustained and you were given support by your boss and your team, what happened? You started developing, you started becoming capable. So the second thing comes, capability. So when you became capable, what happens? When the work comes to you, you are able to do it faster. When you do work faster, productivity goes up. And so you are able to work with systems. What's a system? It's a network of number of groups coming together, a number of departments, number of different types of working units coming together forms a system. And when the systems comes, then we have other things like bonding, behaviors, etc. So all this is human endeavor. Endeavor means what? I choose to do it. So none of us can force people to do something when they don't want to do it. You know, we offer monetary incentives to people. I give you 1 lakh, you'll do so much amount of work. I give you 2 lakhs, you'll do double the work. I give you 3 lakhs, you'll do 3 times the work. Is it true all the time? No. At one point of time, human endeavor, when it stops, no amount of money, no amount of any types of jazz can help them. This is something few people realize, few managements realize, few businesses realize that it's important to keep people motivated, and most importantly, you have to give them certain types of push so that they come out with the endeavor. It's a choice which I need to make for doing what I'm doing. Okay, so taking it further, friends, what are the functions of HRM? HRM starts with the usual planning. Any scientific approach requires a plan. So it prepares forecasts for the future HR requirements on the basis of an organization's environment, mission, objectives and strategies. The organization has to set up a goal. Every organization is a outcome of what? Outcome of a vision. A dream. A dream with a passion. A dream with a passion and an urgency to act is what is a vision. A vision is something very abstract. It's there in the mind of the visionary. Now when this vision is articulated, vision is in my mind, when it is articulated, it becomes what is called as a mission. A mission leading to a mission statement. The mission statement is the extract, the essential extract, the actionable extract from the vision of the visionary. Okay. Now this mission has to be put in very simple terms. Each word should be very powerful, powerful enough to create that emotion to act. And this mission is articulated in the form of what is popularly called as a mission statement. So it's essential for us to understand that people have to be given the space for coming out with their own initiatives. Now this is easily said than done. That's why in many organizations HR has got a very bad name. We'll discuss what HR is supposed to do, but HR is not doing it in many organizations. So what are we doing in a planning of in HRM? We prepare forecasts for the future HR on the basis of an organization's environment, mission, objectives and strategies. That means once I know my vision, I create the mission statement. Then from there, I create the strategy, which is nothing but a set of action plans to be done when we are going into the unknown future. There are two things. One, we heard about planning. We learned about planning in principles of management. We also have strategic management. So what's the difference? The difference in strategic management, we have formulation, whereas planning is there in principles of management. What are we doing in formulation? The difference is that when the unknowns are too many, and the goals are also, we are not sure about which goal we'll be taking. We have some goal, but we need to be quick when the conditions change. That's the time strategy comes. Typical warfield type of a situation. So, once my vision is there, the mission statement is created and the strategy is created, then we have objectives and finally we have the goals achieving. Now, this is nothing but, I want to know in an organization how many people to employ, how many people to take in. How many people to who will be taken in? How many are retiring? And how many are resigning? So we have to have some sort of a numbers game. In large organizations, you know, when you talk about large organizations like Larsen & Toubro, Infosys, Wipro and all these large companies, they are hiring hundreds and thousands of people. So it becomes a major, major exercise. It's an exercise to know how much of cost is involved in hiring people. How many people are going to be retained? What's going to be the wage bill? There are so many things taken into account. So we need to have a very, very defined planning. Those of you who are going to be specializing in human resources management, you'll be coming across a separate chapter only on manpower planning. So it's about all about planning here, right? Next, we go to staffing. Staffing is what basically, to put it in one single line, the right person for the right job. Obtaining people with the appropriate skills, abilities, knowledge, and experience and expertise to fill jobs in the organization. This involves human resource planning, job analysis, recruitment and selection. A little too worded. In simple terms, there's a job profile which we create, and in the job profile it's mentioned that we want a person, let's say with 3 years of experience, mechanical engineer from Bombay University, having worked in the site for about 3 years. Okay, this is the type of profile which we give. So based on the profile, what happens? We conduct an interview. We draw in applications to the recruitment process. And then when the applications come, we select the right person for the right job. This whole process is staffing. That's what you're doing in staffing, right? Now we take it further. Developing. Next is developing. What is the development? Development is nothing but making the person take up higher levels of responsibility. I gave this example in my classroom about, you know, how training and development can be easily understood. See, we have a behavior B1. This behavior B1 gives you a certain performance P1. Behavior can't be measured. Performance can be measured in terms of tangible output. Let's say behavior B1 is giving an output of 100 units P1. When I'm developing the human being, I'm converting him from behavior B1 to B2, which is a higher order behavior. So this B2, we expect an output P2, which is greater than P1. If B1 is giving an output of 100 units P1, then when he comes to B2, he must give an output of, let us say, 200. So P2 should be always greater than P1. Now when I talk about development, I am talking about the human skills development, which has to come out in the form of a output development also. Now all this comes under an area called performance management, which we'll be discussing at a later stage in one of the later chapters. So developing means analyzing learning requirements to ensure that employees possess the knowledge and the skills to perform the jobs satisfactorily and advance their career. All of us have got ambitions, isn't it? So we don't join a company and we retire, join a company as a trainee and retire as a trainee. Nobody does it. So when we are in the organization, I've got a certain limited body of knowledge with me. I come with my qualifications. I'm a mechanical engineer, for example. I come with my mechanical engineering qualifications. I joined a production center, a unit. Now, when I'm working there, I'm come with a limited knowledge. With every day of working, my experience keeps on adding. And when the experience adds, that alone is not enough. There are certain higher functions which the management wants me to take over. Because they want me to grow. And also because there are vacancies at the top. So, for this purpose, I need to have superior skills. Let's say, for example, a salesman. A salesman is promoted based on the sales that he does. The medical rep profession. Okay, they get promoted by the sales that they do, the number of units of whatever they are selling. Now, he is good in sales skills. Now, if I have to develop him to become an area manager, in pharma companies, we have a position called area managers, just above the medical reps. Then what happens is, area manager is a person who has to have the additional skills of managing people. So, I have to develop him. If I merely take him as a person who is very successful in selling and I assume that he is going to become a good area manager and under whom, you know, number of medical reps will be working, I am mistaken. I have to first develop him into learning to handle people skills. Now that comes under development. So the knowledge and the skills he needs to have for making things happen. That's very important. So that's one of the development, or developing is one of the functions of HRM. Next comes the function of monitoring, in which we are going to be covering job evaluation, performance appraisal, pay and benefits. It's nothing but, you know, when people are working, why would a person come and work in an organization? An organization is a social entity, I said, right? An organization is promising to deliver something to the community outside. The community are the customers, right? Now, imagine every organization is making a promise to the society, right? I'll give an example. There's a restaurant, and in the restaurant every day we go and we have our snacks or whatever. Let's say we go for a vada sambar, and when we go to the Udupi restaurant for having a vada sambar, we order for a plate of vada sambar and two vadas are coming in the plate. Now today when I go to the restaurant, I'm finding the two vadas are of the same size. We are used to this, nothing great about it. Now imagine I go to a restaurant, a very peculiar restaurant, in which one vada is big and one vada is small. And I ask the waiter, what's the matter? The waiter says, well, today, you know, the chef was not very, he was not in a mood to work, so he made vadas of different dimensions, no standardization. So I go away. If I am a person who loves thrill, I may come on the third day. On the third day when I come there, I may find that both the vadas have become smaller. Not because of economical reason, but because the cook did not have a mood to make the vadas properly. The fourth day, as an adventurist, again I go there, I find that it is back to square one. Now tell me one thing, would you like to go to such a restaurant on a normal day? No. Okay, people are shaking their heads. Why would you not like to go? Because that particular organization, that particular restaurant does not have consistency. So one of the hallmarks of an organization is it should have consistency. What does it mean? Every day I go to a restaurant, I must get a predictable size of vada, or a predictable size of idli, or a predictable taste of a chutney or a sambar. Right? Now, all of us look for it, isn't it? When we go to any organization, we are looking for consistency. First hallmark of an organization. When an organization is making a promise to the world outside, it has two things. One is consistency. The second one is dependability or reliability. Dependability or reliability. What does it mean? It means that the organization has got certain things, certain projections to the world outside. It says, I am promising you quality. These are the timings in which the restaurant will be open. We open at 6 a.m. and we close at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. whatever time. Now when they say 6 and 10 and then they say Monday's closed or Thursday's closed, now it is expected that on Thursday the restaurant is closed. It is expected that from 6 to 9 it is open, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. But imagine on a Thursday you are walking by the restaurant and the restaurant is open. And you go and ask the person sitting at the cash counter, how come it is open? And today hum logo mood laga, we just wanted to keep it open. Okay, on another day you go, on a Sunday you are taking a family out because Sunday the restaurant is supposed to be open and Sunday it is closed. Why? Because the owner has suddenly felt like going for a vacation. Now would you like such a scenario? It sounds hilarious. So the point I am driving home is, friends, we need consistency of the product or the service. We also need a dependability of the working of the organization. Make a note of it. Consistency of the product or the service that is being offered as a promise, and we also need a dependability or reliability of the people who are running the organization. Now these two have to come. To make these two things happen, what is the most important foundation? Discipline. Organizations need to have a discipline when they make a promise. Organizations need to have a discipline when they make a promise. Now, are human beings who run the organizations naturally disciplined? Are human beings who run the organizations naturally disciplined? The answer is no. All of us love our freedom. All of us love our freedom, isn't it? Now, to put somebody into a discipline, he'll ask for something in return. To put somebody in discipline, he'll ask something in return. So, a free thinking individual, a free spirited human being, when you hire him in an organization, he's definitely going to look for something in return. He needs to say, he says that I'm giving away my freedom to stay with you from 9 to 5 every day. What are you going to give me back in return? So the organization will say that fine, I'm giving you salary. Salary is for the work that he's doing. But over and above that, to make him stay there and to make him grow and to make him feel that he belongs to the place, we need to do something more. I'm talking to you right now. Now, what is motivating me to do this? I can talk from two different angles. One is I've been told to do it, so I'm doing it. And it will show the way you're listening to me. On the other hand, I can say nothing doing. I have come here. I'm enjoying it because of the conditions available here, because of the motivation I've got from the institute, which is a fact. And hence, I enjoy doing what I do. Now, if I want my employees to be satisfied, more than satisfied, motivated, having a high morale, then I need to understand that I need to develop them. At the same time, I need to monitor them. I need to set certain standards. When I set some standards, and those standards are coming through job evaluation, I have to evaluate the job. Which job has got what value? Because when I know what job has got what value, I know how much to pay the employee in terms of salaries and incentives and bonuses. Performance appraisal. I need to know how well the job has been done. I need to know how well the job has been done and how well the person has done the job. The job holder. The human being. So that's covered under performance appraisal. Then pay and benefits, which is the compensation that he gets for his mind and muscle which he gives to the organization. Next we have maintaining. Now it's important that, you know, when you work in an organization, there is required what is called as basic hygiene conditions. What do you mean by hygiene? Hygiene means, now right now I'm talking to you, this room where I am, it's very comfortable. So I feel the level of maintenance, right? Now this maintenance is making me do this particular lecture with you pretty comfortably, pretty balanced, pretty focused. I feel nice talking to you. Now, when employees are working in an organization, they need to have certain minimum standards of working. They need to have a very clean place, well ventilated, hygienic. Now, those things are very essential. Now, that comes under maintaining. This is a part of the human resources management. Workplace safety, health and welfare policies and statutory compliance, the legal compliance. When you work in an organization, there are certain legal things which are a part of the working environment. Now we take ourselves to the evolution of HRM, which is the history of HRM. A very brief snapshot is given. How it happened. Long, long back, there was nothing called HRM. Long, long back, what happened after the Industrial Revolution? We had to produce. The conditions prevailing during the Industrial Revolutions was that we had to produce because we were coming out of the economic depression. I am talking about the US of 1920s and 30s, which we covered in Principles of Management, right? Now, during that time, what happened? There was a lot of flourish of activities. What was the focus? The focus was production, production and production. Who was producing? People were producing. People were not the focus. Production was a focus. I mean, nobody had anything against people. The only thing is that what was the need of the hour? The need of the hour was to pump up the economy into prosperity. So the entire focus, all the researchers, all the management gurus, they were only focusing on how to make scientific management happen. Starting from scientific management developed by Taylor, workers' welfare departments, industrial psychology born with World War I. So when we studied principles of management, if you remember, we had the second chapter, development of management thought. Now there we talked about the history of principles of management. And there we talked about the number of people who contributed to their management process. And initially we talked about only work, structuring it, 14 Principles of Scientific Management of Henry Fayol, and there we talked about how an organization has to run scientifically. A couple of points in that 14 principles mentioned about human resources indirectly. Esprit de corps, team working, team spirit. Henry Fayol spoke about it, but there was only a passing reference. Then there are other people who came in, Elton Mayo, if you recall the names. Then we had Henry Gantt. Then we talked about Mary Parker Follett, who talked about behavioral sciences. Then we had Lillian Gilbreth, who talked about the role of psychology of the human beings who are working there. Those were the gradual, little by little, you know, the starting point of what we popularly called it as HRM and organization behavior, which is a subject again we are dealing in this semester. Right? So, between 1890 and 1910, scientific management developed by Taylor, workers welfare departments, industrial psychology, born with World War I. A snapshot. I am not going into the details of it. Then came the next period, 1930 to 1945, which is a post-depression period in the US. Post-economic depression, which we have discussed in our principles of management coverage. Right? Now, during this time, the Hawthorne studies took place, the famous Hawthorne experiments done by Elton Mayo and his team. The focus was on social and informal aspects of workplace. If you remember the experiment, what was it talking about? Some girls were assembling bulbs in a bulb manufacturing factory in Chicago, USA. And it was a manual assembly. And Elton Mayo and his researchers, they felt that if the lighting conditions improved, the girls would do a better job. So what did they do? They went along and did some research. They isolated one group of girls who were in one area and they started studying there. They started varying their work functions, giving them longer breaks, shorter breaks, monitoring them, etc., etc., etc. Thereby, they established a correlation between three factors: lighting conditions, human motivation, and productivity. And human motivation is a function of the surroundings, one of the things they established. So that's where the social aspect came and the informal aspect came. What do you mean by informal? See, when I'm working with you, I could be very formal. I'll just talk about rules, regulations, I'll be very impersonal. All of you agree that being impersonal does not bring out the best in people. Today, all organizations anywhere in the world, the best ones are the ones where people are developing bridges and they have a rapport between each other. When we are informal, what happens? I feel nice, I feel that people are wanting me. And if there's any issue, I don't hesitate, I don't have a fear to go and talk. When I started my career as a trainee engineer, those were the days when we couldn't even see anybody above the person to whom we were reporting. It was a highly formal structure. It was full of fear. You know, people were not given the freedom the way some of you youngsters who are listening to me are getting it today. It's a very different scenario altogether today, right? So, informal aspect is very important. And that affects the productivity. Job satisfaction raises productivity. Job satisfaction means a person feels happy with the job. Job satisfaction has nothing to do with the money that you give them. Job satisfaction comes from within me. There are very large IT companies, very good brands, where people are so much satisfied that the salary levels are not very high. So people stay in the company. They don't attrit. They don't leave the company. So job satisfaction is a function of what I feel inside me about the job that I'm doing right now. Okay? Taking it further, 1945 to 65. In 1945 to 65, there was a union movement that started. So surge in the union membership in the US. The trade union started, collective bargaining. Focus on collective bargaining and labor relations and compensations and benefits on the forefront as unions negotiate with management. Okay? So that was a focus. What happened initially? We had a lot of production. When the production started increasing and multiplying, the labor were put under a little bit of pressure. Some companies recognized it, they were treating the people well. But largely what happened, people were insensitive because they had grown with the philosophy that production matters. So there had to be some moment wherein somebody had to come and tell them, hey, people matter. And when people matter, you better give them what they want. When they did not listen, people had to come together, form what is called as a trade union and do what is called as a collective bargaining. So that was age 1945 to 65. Then came 65 to 85 when people were asking for their rights, civil rights. They said nothing doing, treat us well. Treat us with a lot of respect. It was a collective movement in the US. Equal employment opportunities, both the genders, the male and the female genders, they came together, they had to work shoulder to shoulder. And for that matter, anybody, even the color of the skin in US, the black versus the white, they came together. Okay? And it became one of the most important part of the HR responsibilities in organizations. HR had to frame policies. HR had to frame certain procedures and practices in which discriminatory things were eliminated. In fact, it was very clearly put as per the constitution that we are giving equal opportunity to everybody. Given certain basic requirements of the job, the qualifications, the experience, the attitude, between a black and a white, whoever is the best will take. It's not about the color. Between a man and a woman, we can take anybody who's doing the job well. This was the movement that started. Okay? Now, taking it further, friends, 1985 onwards, it can go right up to the current period, it can go, or it can stop somewhere else. But let's take it to the current period. Increasing diversity in labor force. Diversity means what? Today, the labor force has got a lot of people of different age groups, from different nations, different cultures, both the genders. The age group is also reduced in terms of handling higher responsibilities. It's a very diverse group of people. It wasn't the case some 40-50 years back. Because of the nature of the work that you're doing today, global working, this is happening. Then businesses have become globalized. Since technological revolution has taken place, businesses are cutting across country boundaries. They are going all around the world. We have an IBM located in all parts of the world. We have an Infosys located in different parts of the world. So there are what are called as transnationals and multinational companies everywhere in the around across the globe. Okay? And the focus on HR as a strategic function came in. Underline the word strategic. HR was seen as one of the support functions. Even now many companies do this. They are guilty of doing it. When we say strategic means, in a strategic function, the persons or the people who are involved in the strategic function have a say in policy making. They can put their foot down and say nothing doing, this is what it should be. Usually what happens, all the profit centers, there are two different types of functioning in organization. Profit centers and cost centers. In fact, there's a third center which some of us are articulating, we call it investment centers. Human resources actually is an investment center, not a cost center. So conventionally it was believed that profit centers, marketing, production, all those things in which we can see the profits coming right in front of us immediately are seen to be focused more by many organizations. HR was seen as a back office function. Even today many companies do it. And so what they say is that they feel it is not a strategic requirement. So a certain policy is taken up and then the company informs the HR people. HR people drive it down the employees, and if there is any work to be done, policing work, HR does the policing work. That's what is done in many companies. And when it comes to strategic matters, when it comes to allocation of budgetary funds, you know, HR is given the last choice. Even it comes to training and development, for example, when there's an economic slowdown, training is given the last choice. Now that is not strategic. When a strategic means the HR department works with a lot of its own self-esteem, as much self-esteem as all the other departments which are given a blue-eyed boy treatment. It's very important. Few companies have got HR departments which are strong and which actually say something and the top management listens and takes action. Now that's the type of strategic functioning that today we are into. Okay? HRM concepts and concerns integrated into overall strategic planning to cope with rapid changes, intense competition and pressures for increased efficiencies. A very long wording. Today, HRM is not a department. We have an HR department wherein I would say that the future scenario would be the HOD doubles as an HR person. If I am a head of the department of a marketing function, then I would be also doing recruitment, selection, training and development of my boys. Does it not make sense? Today we have companies in which, with due respect to HR are there and they are appointing trainers, they are appointing, you know, they do recruitment selection process. Many of them, unfortunately, with due respect to them, are not having a full knowledge about the vertical function for whom they are hiring. Now that creates a lot of disconnect. See, if I am a production person, I know whatever boys I need. I know the job profile. And I also know the mindset of a person whom I am to hire. So, I would be one of the most important drivers to take it. In fact, at the very initial stage of the recruitment process, I should be involved. It's not happening in many organizations. HR, by their own way they function, again, no offense meant, it's the way some companies structure it, it's a top management that has to structure it. The HR does certain things a little mechanically, without understanding the in-depth aspects of the work. They get some basic training on that, that's all, period. After that, they take it off. In that process, I've seen as a consultant, as a trainer, in many organizations I've seen that the right person is not allowed to come in. Somewhere by default, you know, the right person is eliminated because the HR people, when they do the preliminary interview, they do not have the skills to identify this person is required for this type of a job. It happens. Okay? So, today it's become very complex. HRM has become it's a very, very defined function. Today HR becomes a backbone of an organization. Whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, HR has become a specialized function, and that too, it's slowly becoming a strategic function. So when you're taking a policy decision, the board of directors sit together, or the top management sits together, the policy makers, HR makes it a point to be there, and HR is given importance. Okay?